Okay, so this is a follow-up, kind of a continuation of the morning class, which was accessing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Is anybody here that wasn't here this morning? Oh. Listen to the recording. But I'll do a little mini refresh. Our purpose, I will say my purpose in being with all of you, is explicitly, in explicit language, for myself and for you, to permanently make an effort to permanently enhance our relationship with Krishna through our relationship with the Holy Name. We discussed the meaning of sankalpa or intention. And where intention goes, that's where attention goes. So hopefully that theme will stay with you. What's the intention of our being here, so that pieces over here and over there, experiences, realizations, ups and downs and exchanges and services and the whole package connects with the intention. We spoke this morning about we're all chanting, and I don't know if anybody would volunteer to say, I think my chanting is just fine. I don't have any room for improvement in my chanting. I don't think anyone will say that. So the room for improvement is to come to what Lord Chaitanya came to give. That he came to give the pure holy name, Shuddha Nam. And the distinction between the pure holy name and where we are is offenses. And foremost of the offenses that's driving all the other offenses is inattention while chanting, having to do with our attention is elsewhere. And one of the main things that our attention goes elsewhere, and thus offensive chanting, is the time we spent in the morning session was, well, missing the message of Shikshastakam number 3, Trinadapi Suniche no Tarori Vasihishuna Amani Namanadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. For those of you that are new, these are primary obstacles that keep us from pure chanting. The first one that we spent some time with was humility. Before you can go beyond where you are, there has to be recognition, I'm very tiny. Very tiny. And on my own strength, the material energy is very difficult to overcome. And I'm afflicted by the influence of the material energy. It's very difficult to overcome. Try as I may, daivahiyeshu gunamayi mama maya Duratya, yeah, it's too difficult. Too difficult. But that the good news is, Mam eva ye prapadyante, mayamitam tarantite. We can easily go beyond it. Really? How? Become humble. Ooh. But that's where it starts. That was our discussion. One of the discussions this morning. I wanted to share something. Just it's nice to appreciate devotees. So one devotee I want to appreciate right now is Madhava. Some of you who are kirtan fans, you all know who Madhava is. And those of you who aren't kirtan fans, you'll want to meet Madhava just from hearing what I'm about to describe. Or just hear his kirtan. Like, you know, Rati was singing one of his melodies, one of his classic melodies. So Once upon a time, maybe 6 years ago, I was attending a North American GBC meeting in New Vrindavan that we were conducting in June. And just so happened it was the first of the 24-hour kirtan programs in New Vrindavan. And they just happened to schedule it the same weekend as we were there. That was really nice. We got to leave our meeting and go and sit down and join the 24-hour kirtan and then go back to our meeting. You know, take a bath and go back and get dirty again. So when I went in to see the deities and see the kirtan, there was Madhava singing, and I had never seen him before. I just heard his name before. I didn't know who he was. Wasn't even sure it was him because I didn't know him and the name. So I sat and really was appreciating the kirtan. As soon as the kirtan was over, he got up, came straight to speak to me. We had never seen each other before. I don't even know if he knew my name. He came before me with palms folded like this and said, "My name is Madhava Das, and I have a request." "What's that?" "Please bless me that I always remain humble and I never become proud." That was his first words. Okay. Fantastic request. And a little conversation, and, you know, I had to go back to the meeting. 2 years later, I think it was again in New Vrindavan, I went specifically just to take part in the 24-hour kirtan. The meeting, we canceled those meetings. And same, we'd only had met once before. Out of the crowd, he came, you know, "Hari Bol Maharaj, I have a request." Guess what his request was? Same request, 2 years later. "Please bless me that I may become proud." And, you know, a little light went on that said, he really means it. This is his character. It's deep within not just his bones or his mind, it's within the soul. He wants Trinadapi Sunichina. And he understands without blessings it's not going to happen. So he wants it, and he's got the right method to get it. Whew. Then, just this, so the third time we had some exchange was just this year at the Mayapur meeting. It was the event was the anniversary of the Panchatattva installation. And before that it was Nama Yajna. They had some function in, you know, leading up to that event of the, again, Abhishek, major event. So he was invited to attend that, and once again, third time, no other exchanges with him for any other thing. He came out of the crowd in Mayapur, you know, that patio in front of the temple, that terrace thing. I was going to my room, and same thing. This, you know, a few months ago. Wow, this is a person that really wants to be fixed in that mood of humility. Now, the message this morning was, why? To access the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, so that we can access the pure holy name and chant without offense. Because that's exactly what the song that was sung this morning, we're going to sing it again tomorrow morning to refresh our memory. The second verse in particular, Sakale Samana Korite Shakati. O Lord and Master, inspire me with the power to befittingly honor all living beings. Only then will I be able to sing the holy name of the Lord in great ecstasy, and my offensive activities will cease. So we emphasized starting from humility, comes appeal, understanding the necessity for something beyond my own little tiny, sincere but tiny effort. I need mercy. This is our Vaishnav teaching. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description of Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna, Damodar Leela, and the rope is 2 inches too short. She gets more ropes, ties the ropes together, it's 2 inches too short. Many, 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 many ropes, and it's 2 inches too short. In our Acharya's writings, Mother Jasoda marvels, my goodness, why is it always 2 inches? So it could be something else, but it's always 2 inches. Why? This is most amazing. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur indicates one part is our effort, prayasa, but the other part is mercy. That's the 2 inches. And then Krishna shows his mercy. Why? Why did he show his mercy to Mother Jasoda? She's honored in this leela for her love. It's a whole other... When I speak the Sri Brahma Samhita topic, I'll go into it in detail. But so Krishna exhibits his mercy. And then she can bind him, because without Krishna's mercy, what can we do? Become humble? Good luck. You'll get something else. You get something that may look like, but doesn't pinch it a little bit, and it becomes something other than humble. Ow! I lost my humility. Cats and dogs. So, real humility is on the platform of the soul, and then we recognize we need mercy, and then we surrender. Pranipat. Submission. We had this discussion in our Bhagavatam class the other day. Himanshu was here. He asked, you know, when we hear this phrase, call from the heart, what does that mean? My answer was, with submission. Like, I'm over here calling, then there's the name, and then what's going on inside? Pranipat, submission. Call from your heart. Call from your heart. The leela that we're going to recite has this element. It's one of the reasons for selecting it. There's a number of reasons, but that's one of them. When Ristasura comes, terrifying everybody, what do the cowherds do? They just call Krishna's name from their heart. They don't even say anything like, help, you know, get rid of this guy. It's just, Krishna, Krishna. That's all. And Krishna hears. And Krishna responds. And Krishna protects them. From Arishta. We're going to hear some more about that. So this is review. And the two terms from the song that we sang this morning, which we'll hear again tomorrow. The repetition is important. It's for remembrance, because we have a tendency to forget. After all, it is Kali Yuga. And our memories are short. So that's why I have notes. Sakale Samana, if you remember that. Honoring all living beings properly. Honoring all living beings properly. Like Kalidas, wonderful leela in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he had this strong desire to get the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Because by getting the mercy of the Vaishnavas, what happens? You access the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And that's what happened. He took a vow, and he fulfilled it, taking the prasad of all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. And during the time of Lord Chaitanya, there were a lot of Vaishnavas. So he had a lot of home visits, a lot of door-to-door sankirtan, honoring the Vaishnavas to get the mercy, the prasad of the Vaishnavas. And as a result, Lord Chaitanya gave access to Kalidas that he didn't give to anybody. In fact, he admonished. It's a long lila. If we had an extra 45 minutes, we could describe. He admonished those who tried to take the water from his foot bath. In Gudicha temple, there's a lila like that. Severely chastised the person who tried to, but Kali, he watched him do it. As he was entering into the Jagannath temple, there was a particular place where Lord Chaitanya would have his feet washed before, because walking barefoot, before entering the temple, he would have his feet washed. Kali stood with his hands extended water and drank it. And extended his hands and drank it again. And extended his hands and wanted to drink it again. And Lord Chaitanya said, that's enough. He gave him mercy that he didn't give anybody. Why? Because he was eager for the mercy of the Vaishnavas. This Sakale Samana, extending, it's a power. It's not a material gift. It's not a mode of goodness gift. It's a spiritual power to honor Vaishnavas properly. And then one gets mercy. One can have access to the holy name that one doesn't have access to if one doesn't have that spiritual empowerment. So where do we get that spiritual empowerment? The song that we sang is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is offering prayers to Gurudev. And in the case of Kalidas, he is approaching all the Vaishnavas of Bengal. And at least we have, you know, the Sangra Vaishnavas around us. We don't have to go to all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. Just, you know, the persons next to you. And it's just not like they have to be like, you know, super devotees and then I can ask for mercy from them. But it's a condition of heart. Sakale Samana. And Nijamane Spriha Hina. Nijamane means personal honor. In terms of personal honor, Nijamane Spriha Hina. Free me from the desire for that. Which coincidentally, and not coincidentally, purposely, it matches exactly what Lord Chaitanya says, Amani na manadena. Prabhupada translates Amani na as not being puffed up by false pride. And false pride is false pride. Whatever we have, it's not ours. So whatever we have pride in, it's false pride because it's not ours. Whatever it is that you have, supposing somebody has wealth, supposing somebody can dress the deity nicely, supposing somebody can cook nicely, supposing somebody something, you know, like the devotees that just organized the Rath Yatra festival. Man, what an endeavor to do that. But where is the capacity to do that come from? Etc. Whatever it is, the tendency to be proud is there because of the bodily conception of life. It one follows the other, I and mine. Without getting released from the bodily conception of life, we're going to be proud. And when we're prideful, we'll do horrible things and we'll fall. Pride goeth before the fall. So, without being puffed up by false pride, amani na, or not expecting any, not even a little, not expecting any personal honor. In fact, we can expect the opposite, because it's the world of duality. Sometimes you're honored, and sometimes you're dishonored. Just stand still for a while. Don't do anything. And somebody's going to honor you, and somebody else will dishonor you. Or do something, and somebody will honor you, and somebody will dishonor you. So what's the solution? Go out of existence. That's not a solution. It's not even an option. We exist. So we're gonna, it's gonna, duality is going to happen. And the, given the material condition of life is we want honor and we don't want dishonor. This is not just become desireless. It's become spiritually situated. You desire without any happiness or honor going to you. Let the honor go to Krishna. Let me share something with you. Once upon a time I was a brahmachari, and then something happened. They said, you know, you're supposed to take sannyas. I said, why do I need to take sannyas? I'm very happy being a brahmachari. No, you should take sannyas because there's facility for preaching. What are you talking about? I have so much facility for preaching, I can't do it all. So, you know, I don't need facility for preaching. No, you should take sannyas. You've been approved by the GBC to take sannyas. Say, oh, thanks. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. Because I had saw persons jockeying for position, striving to take sannyas because of the honor, and it was disgusting. So I didn't want anything to do with it. I said, no thanks. And the answer I got was, you must be attached. I said, could you explain that to me, please? You must be contemplating maybe you want to become married and so you don't want to take sannyas. Oh, that's what you're thinking. Okay. Think that I'm attached. Go ahead. I'm very happy. I'll just stay where I am. And, you know, devotee after devotee, a whole year passed, you should take sannyas. So I just, like, get them to leave me alone, took sannyas. And it was really amazing. Like, really amazing. So first I'm a brahmachari offering obeisances to everybody, and then they have this little ceremony, and I get it done, and then everybody's offering obeisances to me. So I was offering obeisances to them, because, you know, for so many years, trained as a brahmachari, you offer obeisances to the devotees, and they say, no, you shouldn't do that. What do you mean I shouldn't do that? You offer obeisances to the devotees. No, but you're a sannyasi, and it's the duty of a sannyasi to receive. It's good for people that, you know, that's why you're a sannyasi. You're helping people. Oh, come on, you know. By offering obeisances too. Let me offer obeisances. Don't tell me I can't do that. But then slowly, because I'm a slow learner, slowly I understood, it's not for me. Huh? Okay. It's not they're offering obeisances to me. It's the sannyas order. So it's not to me, it's to, you know, the sannyas order. So it just goes through you to, you know, to Prabhupada. Because by his association, a fallen dog, it became a devotee, and then the devotee became initiated, and the initiated devotee became a sannyasi. It's him. They're offering obeisances to him. You know, so millions of obeisances, fantastic. It all goes to him. It's not for me. The uncomfortable part was thinking was for me. That was a horrible feeling, because it's not. That's why I felt uncomfortable. Then it becomes easy. It's not wishing honor. It's a service on behalf of the person who picked me out of a ditch in some dark place and forced me to open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge and banged me on the side of the head a few times to get me to, you know, act in a proper way. It's all credit goes to, just like exactly the verse, the song, if you search within me, you won't find any good quality. If you find a good quality, he put it there. That's all. So people can pay obeisances to the good quality, whatever it is they see, and it came from him. That's all. Offer millions of obeisances. Fantastic. It's not for me. So that's the amanina manadena. Not wishing honor and learning, having the strength to properly honor every living being. You read the scriptures carefully. I invite carefully. And you'll find this is a quality that exalted devotees have. I'll give one example. Out of hundreds. Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Pariksha. He's cursed to die. He gives up his kingdom, gives up the crown, the throne, the royal garments, everything, dons the garments of a mendicant, declares that he's going to fast until death, the bank of the sacred river, invites all the saintly people to come, and they come. And with folded palms, he offers a prayer, a request, three requests. Whatever may happen, may I remain fixed in my attachment to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. That's sufficient, right? But he doesn't stop there. He says, may I always, second thing, have the association of devotees who are similarly attached to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. So that's enough, right? But then he doesn't stop there. There's everybody else. May I have a friendly relation, friendly regard for all living beings. That means those that aren't such qualified saintly personalities. You know, consciousness on the platform of the soul and sakale samane, having a proper regard, offering respects in a proper way to all living beings. Why? Without it, we are not going to have a proper relationship with Krishna, because the living beings are part of Krishna. What to speak of the devotees who are carrying bhakti in their heart? And supposing those devotees have some faults. Well, we read this morning, there's a statement in Sanskrit that Prabhupada quotes that says, all living beings have qualities and faults. No surprise. When I was a teenager, like pre-Krishna consciousness teenager, like a little guy growing up in America, a little light went on that said, any two-bit teenager can find all the faults. But where is that teenager that can find the solution? So I wasn't into, like, you know, the program of finding faults. Teenagers love to find faults. It's like they're really good at it. And they're right. Not always they're right, but often they're right. Okay. Now what? What's the solution? So we're being given the solution. And it's access to Krishna through his holy name. And these four things are necessary. I want to spend a little bit of time. That's like a review of this morning. And I want to spend a little bit of time completing what I didn't get to speak about this morning. And that's the downside. Supposing we don't have that quality, the default position or the material contamination position is we engage in fault finding, rather than seeing the qualities. It's just this, the default position. The mode of goodness kind of like covers over, I'm okay, you're okay. But, you know, mind does go to the faults. When we fault find, or even more radically, we disrespect others, and particularly disrespect devotees, we can't access Krishna, and we become implicated in matter. I'm going to just read a few quotes that amplifies that little statement. One is from Chaitanya Bhagavat, from Vrindavan Das Thakur, the author. If your aim is love of Godhead, beware of Vaishnava Parad. And one of the offenses, sadhu, ninda, or vilification, or criticizing Vaishnavas. Here's from another passage from Chaitanya Bhagavat. The Vaishnava devotees of the Lord are eternally pure and realized souls. Sometimes there are, this is Bhakti Siddhanta in a purport from Madhya 5. Sometimes there are differences of opinion amongst them, which might appear like an argument. But in fact, it is an amazing relationship between devotees. Foolish rascals who do not understand this exchange praise one Vaishnava and denounce the other. Such a mentality will lead to destruction of faith and knowledge. This is like 4 pages, so I'm just going to read a mini selection. Further from Madhya 3. If Vaishnavas are offended, even by an assembly of renunciates, sannyasis, such an assembly is more irreligious than a group of drunkards. Reason? For drunkards, there is still a chance of salvation, but for those who are critical of Vaishnavas, there's no hope for liberation. Another quote, different section. One never advances in spiritual life by finding faults in other Vaishnavas. In fact, only sinful reactions are increased. So, give up all your fault findings. Another section, chapter 13. To criticize and find faults in pure devotees of the Lord is the most grievous offense against the holy name. Oh, holy name! How can you bear the criticism against your pure devotees through whom your glories have been propagated? You can never tolerate criticism against those who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. Such offenders are annihilated. This is Vrindavan Das, the lover of Lord Chaitanya. Another, Madhya 17. Those devotees who are narrow-minded and bigoted start fighting over petty matters. This is a serious deviation from the path of spiritual realization, and so a really knowledgeable devotee will refrain from taking sides in such disputes. Here's a heavy one. The spiritual master cannot even protect his own disciples against the wrath of the Lord if his disciple commits Vaishnava aparad. In fact, the guru of such a disciple is hard-pressed to protect himself from the effects of the aparad. If the guru is a very elevated stage of devotion, then he can protect himself alone, but if he is not so elevated, then he, along with his disciple, sinks down into hell. It's a pretty heavy one. So, devotees, please. One can become a true Vaishnava by serving Lord Krishna and by not finding faults in others. There's pages of this. I want to read a little section from, some of you are familiar with Vedanta, Prabhupada's spiritual master, called Vaishnava K? What kind of Vaishnava are you? So in the one where he chastises his mind from the desire to perform solitary bhajan for the purpose of receiving glorification, this is wishing honor from others, when in his mind such a person is contemplating bad things like, why aren't other people elevated like me? I'm so great, and so forth and so on. In his purport, he quotes the verse, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta. The mind becomes ashanta, or not peaceful, whenever there is anything other than shelter of bhakti. And when there's shelter of bhakti, nishkam, no material desire can enter. And he goes on, if a devotee, even after renouncing desire for gross sense gratification and fruitive activity, becomes careless and is swayed by desire for superficial importance, I want honor, or material position, he immediately feels dissatisfaction. And Although this dissatisfaction is certainly the cause of untold suffering, should he, under pressure from his materialistic desires, grow envious of exalted souls, his situation becomes especially dangerous. And Bhaktisiddhanta's style, he just keeps going and going and going more deeply. But I wanted to read this one paragraph in particular. Rather than showing humility and accepting the truth of the situation, the Trinadapisunichi, not truth of the situation, the mind, infatuated with the desired importance, wrong in its envious attitude towards the real devotees of the Lord, and reacts with false pride when shown that its path is mistaken. This pride is a symptom of fall down from spiritual life. Therefore, a devotee should be very careful to train his mind in avoiding this dangerous path and learn instead to be humble and sincere. Two other little references, and then we'll move on. One is, I referred to it in class on Wednesday morning, but it's a discussion between Morning Walk Conversation in Mayapur, 1976, February, 1 year before Prabhupada's departure. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj is asking Srila Prabhupada about the difference between fault-finding, blasphemy, and calling a spade. You've heard that expression? Any unfamiliar with that expression? Just like, tell it as it is, like New York. In your face, man. Tell it like it is. So, Tamal Krishna, what is the way to draw the line between the following three things? Blasphemy, fault-finding, and calling a spade, Prabhupada. A spade, just like I am saying that, what are you? You're a small fig only. That's reality. What's the other one? Well, it's calling a spade. We're tiny and insignificant. Doesn't matter who one is. We're tiny and insignificant. That's spiritual reality. Transcendental, eternal, spiritual reality. And specifically, I mentioned for speaking to his disciple because he has that relationship. Austerity of speech is, we don't give such instructions to people unless the relationship is there. We don't offer those kinds of messages unless the relationship is there. Like, go out into the street and tell a person, you're a fig. You're inconsequential. I'm just calling a spade, man. It's when the relationship is accepted like that, then we speak. The spade is a spade. So what is the other? Tamal Krishna. The other is fault-finding and, Prabhupada doesn't let him finish his sentence, fault-finding. That is another fault. That, and he quotes the Sanskrit that we quoted from Chaitanya Charitamrita this morning. Vranam ichchanti. Makshika varam ichchanti. Madhum ichchanti. Just like the flies. They are finding out where is the sore. And the bees, they are finding out where is the honey. So two animals, they have got two businesses, finding fault and collecting the good things. These are two. Just like creature, they are two classes. Similarly, there are many rascals who are simply fault-finding. And again, the reference from Shastra. Every living being has qualities and faults. So if I'm the fly-like person, where's the sore? The fly goes to the sore. And I just, one focuses on the sore, the fault. That's the fault-finding. It's not to say faults don't exist, faults exist. But a dosha-darshi is, one doesn't focus there, one focuses on the honey, the good quality. Tamal Krishna, and blasphemy, Prabhupada. You have got good qualities, but still I'm defaming you. Kamal Krishna. So the saintly person tends to overlook the bad qualities and see the good ones. Prabhupada, yes. Kamal Krishna. Like Krishna's dealing with Putana. And he goes on, giving some other. So Krishna had this quality. And Vaishnavas have that quality. Krishna saw Putana wanted to offer some service as a mother. So he reciprocated with that by giving her the eternal position as mother. In Goloka Vrindavan, to assist Mother Jasoda in a maidservant of Mother Jasoda giving maternal care to Krishna eternally. That's Krishna. And the devotee, this Sakale Samana, that being encouraged by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his song, that we are being encouraged today to do also. And the default is this other program. If that absent, there's another tendency. The two animals, as Prabhupada is saying. The bee and the fly. Which one? Take your pick. And if you don't consciously take your pick, you're in the default position. You're in the fly position. So go to the bee position. And where are you going to get the strength for that? Because it requires strength. Not only, okay, yes, I get it, I agree. And then we don't do it because we don't have the strength to do it. We get the strength through descending mercy. That was this morning's class, the descending mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it connects with this story because Keshi represents, Keshi represents not just false religious teaching, but the pride that goes along with being an exponent of false religious teaching. And one of the things that goes along with that is vilification, disrespect for, or vilification of Shuddha Bhakti. And then in turn Krishna, because Shuddha Bhakti and Krishna are not different, of the same spiritual quality. So if we're not there, we're going to be... Arishta is alive and well in each of us, in short. And Krishna can protect us if we call his name, wishing to be protected from such tendency. Here's a little preamble to this Leela. It'll explain why I'm going to go through the Leela. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written in Chaitanya Shikshamrita the following, just taking an extract. Krishna's activities are of two types, nitya and naimittika. Those are familiar with the Bhagavatam. In the 12th canto, there's this naimittika, or the occasional appearance of creation and then its withdrawal. That's how this word naimittika is used. Occasional. Literally it means occasional. Now you see it, now you don't. Creation, withdrawal of creation. Occasional and eternal. That's his lila of those two types. Some occasional pastimes, examples, include Krishna's leaving Vrindavan to live in Mathura or Dwarka, and is returning to Braja, is killing of various demons and so forth. So that means in Goloka, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. He never leaves Vrindavan. But in his Boma Leela, he leaves Vrindavan. It's a Leela. Actually, he never leaves Vrindavan. It appears that he leaves Vrindavan, and it's a very deep subject that he never leaves Vrindavan. But as a Leela, he leaves Vrindavan. And there's demons. In Goloka, there's no demons. But in his Boma Leela, there's demons, and Krishna kills them. Though those are the naimittika kind, etc. Krishna's birth is another example. In Goloka, there's no birth. The bhav of the mood of love of Mother Yashoda is Krishna is my son. And how is Krishna her son if there's no birth pastime? It's a bhav. There's no birth. There's no lila of birth. But she has that emotion. He's my son. It's mysterious. So in the Naimittika pastimes, he writes, these pastimes are very useful for an aspiring devotee. That's us, by the way. Who is bound within the material world. That's definitely us. It's special. It's for us. Those Naimittika leelas are for us. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. Remember showing this, and Subal asked a question about that, and we spent some time, but it's a nice topic, but it's not. The main focus right here is such sincere devotees, that's you, hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. What's the purpose of those leelas? Here's the purpose. To remove obstacles that are standing between us and our relationship with Krishna. Each one of the demons represents a particular obstacle or an anartha that's there. The rishta that's within us. The putana that's within us and so forth. Affinity for false teachings and etc. So there's a purpose, and by hearing the leela, as by Krishna's performing the leela, similarly by our hearing the leela, it helps us to become free from those contaminations. By remembering these pastimes, devotees aspire to destroy their own demoniac mentalities and tendencies. Now we know from Shikshastaka, verse number 2, how does it begin? Nam namakari bahuda nija sarva shaktihi. That's enough. So, nam nam akari bahuda means there's bahuda. There's Krishna has many names. Prabhupada has translated like Krishna and Govinda. The Supreme Lord has many names like Krishna and Govinda. And each and every one of these names, he has invested the fullness of his potencies. Nijasarva Shaktihi. At the same time, each of those names has some special potency. Those of you that have studied first chapter Bhagavad Gita, you know that Arjuna addresses Krishna by specific names, sometimes Madhava, sometimes Rishikesh, sometimes Janardana, different names. Because each of those names has specific potency. And by saying the name, it invokes that potency. It invokes one's consciousness to that aspect of Krishna. Gudakesh, and so forth. So these pastimes have the similar effect. Krishna's killing of the Arishta demon has the effect, the name, and the pastime has the effect of helping us, you and me and others, to overcome this material contamination that's within us. The Arishta type, in this case. So, the purpose of narrating this is to help us overcome that tendency. So here comes the pastime, with the purpose in mind. In the spring, midway through the period of dusk, our acharyas are very detailed. It's between 8:10 p.m. and 10:30, a certain period of time. When Krishna was eager to perform the rasa dance near Govardhan Hill, those of you that are familiar a little bit with Vrindavan, there are different places. There are many places where Krishna performed rasa lila, but two of the favorites at Vanshivat, and that's in the fall, And there's a place near Govardhan Hill on the western side. Remember that place where Balaram is seeing on the western side of Govardhan Hill Krishna's performance of Rasa Leela, and he's so amazed his mukut falls off. And there's a mukut shila. And there's a temple where he saw from up on Govardhan Hill the Rasa Leela in the springtime. So Krishna was in that area of Govardhan Hill, the western side of Govardhan Hill, to go and enjoy rasa dance with the gopis during this 8:10 to 10:30 p.m. Very eager. At that same time, Arishta madly approached the cowherd village, bellowing, terrifying everyone, tearing up the embankment of the field, eager to fight. The demon Arishta, sent by Kamsa, came to the cowherd village, appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump. He made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves. Arishta had the complexion of a cloud and had sharp horns and eyes blazing like the sun. He repeatedly licked his lips with a loud sound. He twirled his tail in pride. His shoulders were tough and his hump was huge and impossible to pass over. His body was smeared with urine and stool. Yuck. He caused panic in the cows. Skin hung from his throat. His face was scarred by being hit by trees. Means he was big. He always wandered in the forest to attack the sages performing austerities. Not a gentle person. He wandered through the village, breaking everything with anger. He attacked the cows with his horns. The domestic animals fled Vraja out of fear. Arishta was not satisfied since he could not fight. Clouds hovered about sharp-horned Aristasura's hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror indeed. The strident reverberation of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses in miscarriages. There's big Aristasura running down the lane, and the gopis see him coming and they go and embrace the tamal tree. Krishna! The situation became very terrible, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to cry. Krishna! Krishna! That's all they said. When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, "Don't be afraid." And that's all it took. Don't be afraid. And their fear went away because he's their protector. And he's given his word that he'll give protection to his devotees. Now he's acknowledged the difficulty. Just his words. Just like that, their fears went away. He then called out to the bull demon as follows, "You fool! What do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the cowherd community and their animals, when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you?" That made Arishta really angry. Without moving an inch, Krishna slapped his arms with his palms, further angering Arishta with a loud sound. Then, appearing most attractive, he casually threw his mighty serpentine arm over Sridham's shoulder and stood facing the demon, smiling in casual disrespect. "What kind of a big man are you?" This thus provoked, Arishta pawed the ground with one of his hooves, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. Nice painting, Krishna grabbing Arishta. pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arishta rushed towards him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. Watch this special effect. Compliments of Shatarupa, who did that. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Arishtasura by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Picked him up and flipped him around. Coward boys, yay, Krishna! Although the demon was perspiring and appeared very tired, he took courage and got up. Again, he charged Krishna with great force and anger. Repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up and, breathing hard, sweating all over his body, he again charged him in a mindless rage. Huge bull demon. While rushing towards Krishna, he breathed very heavily. You can see his breath coming out of his nostrils. Krishna again caught his horns and immediately threw him to the ground. Then he uprooted his left horn and beat his head with it, as if the horn were Yamaraja's staff. In one of the famous paintings, that Vrindavan Parikrama path used to look like this. I think our artists made the drawing before they made that pavement and all that awful stuff they have there now. As Arishta attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. Being thus kicked by Krishna, Arishta rolled onto his back and began to move his legs violently. The Lord then thrashed him as a cloth and the demon's horns and struck him with it until he left his demon body. Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Arishta then went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. In his commentary on this verse from the Bhagavatam, Sanatan Goswami comments, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, when Krishna kills demons, they achieve either one of two destinations. Whoops. The demons, thus being killed, and Arishta is listed earlier in that verse, would attain either impersonal Brahmajyoti or his personal abode in Vaikuntha planets. And so he comments, this is a statement by Shukadeva Goswami out of disdain for Arishta. He didn't like Arishta at all. He went to the abode of death, Yamaraja's abode. But actually he went to Vaikuntha or Brahmajyoti. But he just, Shukadeva Goswami had no regard at all for Arishta. So this is him charging and this is him getting bashed. And the cowherds, boys, and the cows running out of fear of Arishta, and the clouds hovering around his tail, and all of that. And it starts here. I don't know if any of you can read. Can you read this, the language up here? Yes? All this? No? Okay. Here's Arishta come charging. Here's Krishna's grabbing his horns. He flips him over, grabs the horn, breaks the horn off, and smashes him with his own horn. And then, pastime's over, Krishna comes back home. And the concluding passage of the chapter, Krishna was already the life and soul of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And after killing this demon in the shape of a bull, He became the cynosure of all eyes. Of course, he was already like that. Life and soul is the cynosure of the eyes. Having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he, who is a festival for the gopis' eyes, entered the cowherd village with Balaram, because Arishta had come tormenting them, and they were terrified, and the cows and domestic animals and the residents of Braja, and they called out for Krishna, and Krishna protected them. So this is a little bit about who Arishta was before he was Arishta. This is from Garga Samhita. In his previous life, Arishtasura was a student of Brihaspati by the name Varatantu. He had approached Brihaspati to study under him. One day he was sitting with his feet facing him. Brihaspati didn't like that. He said, "You sit like a bull sits. You have offended your guru, fool. Now become a bull. So don't sit in the wrong way. At least not in front of Brihaspati." Thus, by his curse, Varatantu became a bull. By associating with demons, he became a demon also. By the mercy of Krishna, he was freed from the curse. He was freed from the curse, and he, according to second canto of Bhagavatam, either went to the Brahmajyoti or Vaikuntha. And now here's a little description according to Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta. Arishtasura represents the pride arising from indulging in false religions invented by cheaters, which causes neglect of bhakti. You can read the cartoon if you like. So that's the end of the pastime. Krishna's subduing this tendency. So again, what's the tendency? The tendency to, well, it starts with, you know, bodily conception. And in the bodily conception, I want some honor. So I'll take up something where I'll get some honor. You know, I don't have to be humble. So I'll just do something that I get some honor. And I get some honor by something that works very quickly, and that's not by being humble. So it's some kind of false religion. And then the pomp and, you know, display of the religious thing, activity, etc., etc., without the genuine thing being present. And then naturally what arises, naturally it arises, it's actually behind the whole thing, is that which is shuddha bhakti, I don't have regard for it. In fact, I disrespect it, and disrespect it means to disrespect Krishna. So that's Arishta. With ease, Krishna killed Arishta. And there's a role of the calling of the name sincerely, with real sense of taking shelter in the name, like, you know, from the heart, as we discussed a little bit earlier, with submission unto Krishna in the form of his name, not the mechanical kind like we spoke about this morning. And when Krishna, simply because of the simplicity of the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna simply said, "Don't be afraid." And their fear went away. There's a very nice, just as like this morning, discussing the example of Sanatana Goswami and how Krishna strengthened the calling for mercy of Lord Chaitanya and reducing him to a totally helpless state. Out of love for Lord Chaitanya, he became totally helpless except for just Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Lord Chaitanya gave his mercy. There's a nice example in Krishna's pastimes, because this is The topic this morning was accessing the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Here is now attracting Krishna. That's today's topic, part one. In the forest fire, when same thing, this blazing, there's two of them, blazing forest fire surrounding the cows and the cowherd boys. And the cows are the life and soul of the cowherd boys. They love the cows. And the cows love them, and the cows are completely dependent upon them. And there's this forest fire. So what did they do? They called out to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, oh powerful one. Please protect us and your cows. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they weren't just asking for their own safety and the safety of the cows. They couldn't live for a moment without Krishna. And if their bodies were taken, they wouldn't have Krishna's shelter. They wouldn't want that shelter. Krishna, please, don't take us away from your shelter. Please keep us in your shelter. So Jiva Goswami analyzes. Different acharyas say different things. What was the cause of the forest fire? And Jiva Goswami says, Krishna was the cause of the forest fire because Krishna is the cause of all causes. And then he says, but somebody may argue, why would Krishna put his devotees into such difficulty, life-threatening difficulty? Why would he do that? And Jiva Goswami says, to test them. And the doubting person would say, why would he test them? He knows what their love is. He knows exactly what their love is. And the reply Jiva Goswami gives is, yes, he knows, but we don't know. So he was testing them for us so we could see what is the qualities of the cowherd boys. And he gives the example. A goldsmith, he's a gold merchant, and some customer comes and says, how do I know it's gold or not? He says, I'll show you. I'll put it in fire. And here's how gold behaves in fire. It's the quality of gold. So Krishna did like that. Here is the fire. Now just see the quality of these cowherd boys. Just see. What is their quality? They have only one shelter. Only one shelter. Only one shelter. What about us? Here comes a little tribulation. Where does the mind go? Why did they do that? Or, it's not fair. Or something else. So the song this morning is Bhaktivinoda Thakur praying for the strength to endure tests and tribulations, Taror Iva Sahishnuna, for the strength to properly honor all living beings according to their position, properly honor all living beings. Just like last night in Harinam. The whole assortment of different types of people out there. And some people, I thought one of the funniest things was that Chinese lady with her daughter and her husband. She's just jumped into the kirtan and started dancing with all the devotees. And it wasn't like a spoof. It was just, she thought it was nice or something. And the daughter is taking pictures of her mom dancing with the Harinam party. And so forth. Now, according to position, we honor. I'll tell a Chicago airport story to end. You read in Lilamrita, perhaps, or have heard, if you haven't read in Lilamrita, there was an era in O'Hare Airport where the devotees were distributing volumes and volumes of books. And I became part of that party at a particular time, without the detail. With permission of my temple president, I came and joined the airport party that particular season for the Christmas rush. And it was amazing. Some of the most powerful book distributors in North America were part of that party. And every day, there was hardly room for us in the van because of all the cases of books in the van. And we unloaded the van and put the books in lockers. Now they don't even have lockers because of bombs and things, but they had lockers. And by the end of the day, we just have empty boxes of books because all the books were distributed. I don't know what the number is, but I would guess something like somewhere between 600 and 1,000 books a day were being distributed, something like that, every day. And it was wild. And there was among the many things that happened, now it's, you know, TSA, you can't get security and all that. We didn't have security at that time. It was, people would come down the corridor and funnel through exactly where we were to go down to get to the bags, the baggage claim. And then there was a man, like, you know, a traffic conductor guy, that would tell people, no, you can't go this way, you have to go around to go into those gates because this is just for people coming out of the gates. So he would stand there and watch the hundreds of books every day get distributed. And you could see, like, steam coming out of his ears. This man was envious. And sometimes he'd leave his post and run over and tell people, don't take the book. Or several times, you would take the book and throw it on the ground and jump up and down on the book. Or grab the book and throw it in the garbage. I mean, he was an envious man. But by the end of that season, he did just the opposite. He would go, leave his post and come over and tell people, buy the book. It's good. And then sometimes people would discard the books. So he would gather up the books and come back and give them to us again. I mean, he became transformed, although his heart was envious, just by the association of the devotees. It was amazing. And there's other similar stories. So even envious people can become benefited by the association. So hopefully we can also become benefited by the association. But we have to be very careful with these tendencies for envy of and not properly respecting other living entities, particularly those that are bhakti in their, you know, how they may carry out their bhakti different than we do. Not disrespecting, but properly respecting. And as we discussed this morning, in those cases where there is some shortcoming, let us be in the mood of service with a proper relationship to help, as we would want somebody to help us, overcome our shortcomings. And that way we can have proper sangha, and in that way our attention can go, instead of to the faults of others, to the qualities of others, and appreciating the mercy that we can get from others, accessing the holy name of Krishna properly. Krishna is our true shelter. The killer of the Arishta demon, that same tendency. That's exactly as full circle, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, obstacles that are within each of us, such tendencies, whatever those tendencies, easily Krishna can defeat them. If we take proper shelter of Krishna, and that means proper shelter of Krishna's devotees, appealing for their mercy. Hare Krishna. So, we have some time for discussion. Anything from this morning, because we didn't have time this morning for discussion, or from today? No? And Mataji? Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Please accept my humble obeisances, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada, Guru Angaranga. A couple other devotees and myself were having a discussion about personality. We were wondering, is personality a material thing, or is there a material personality and a spiritual personality? As we elevate, does our person become spiritualized?
Yes.
Or how does that work?
Yeah. It's the second one of the two. There's how we're conditioned now, and that's a manifestation of the modes of nature and our past karma, the combination of the two, according to Bhagavad Gita. Guna karma vibhagasha. That's the personality today. But beneath that, intrinsic is the soul and a spiritual form, spiritual personality, spiritual quality, spiritual service, spiritual everything. That's what we're trying to uncover or awaken. And as long as we're taking shelter of the material side, the conditioned me, which isn't me, then it impedes our progress spiritually. So we have to honor that it's there. It's going to, you know, just like the wind's going to continue to blow. It's still Chicago. It's the windy city. The wind's going to blow. The winters are going to be whatever they are. So the conditioned thing is there, and we have to, initially at least, tolerate, according to what Krishna teaches, chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, that personality. It's not us. And, you know, the anger and the happiness and the sadness and the stuff, personality stuff, it's not who we really are. It's our conditioning. We work with it because it's the package we got. What to do? Meanwhile, in utilizing that according to the codes of theistic conduct, we strive towards goodness. And then meanwhile, we're inwardly cultivating who we really are, the spiritual personality, starting with the seed. Well, the seed is the holy name, and a proper frame of reference of it's called Sambandhagyan, the relationship between the conditioned and Krishna and the soul in its purified state in Krishna and so forth. We start with that foundation of proper knowledge nurtured by the holy name, and then we grow a spiritual garden, and, you know, voila, the spiritual personality comes. And then there's this other one over there, and that kind of diminishes, and this one becomes stronger.
So, Maharaj, my spiritual personality is the Sat-Chit Ananda, like Krishna.
Yeah, exactly.
Full of bliss and knowledge and eternal.
Yes.
But does that make us all the same? Don't we have individual personalities?
Oh, there's variety. Absolute. We're not Krishna. Krishna's within Krishna is everything. And we're a little tiny part of Krishna with a unique personality. And unique service and a unique emotion of love in relation to Krishna, who's the reciprocator of love of all living entities. We have our own little, and Krishna's big. And he's reciprocating. For him, it's no problem having unlimited loving relationships. For us, it's hard to have even one. Okay?
Thank you.
Charinishta?
Maharaj, you mentioned this nice point of getting the blessings, how important it is to get the blessings of the Vaishnavas to achieve success, and the nice story of Madhava. So I'm just wondering, to get the blessings of the Vaishnavas, what does that really mean? And sometimes devotees
what does
ask,
it really mean? It means what it is, you get the blessings.
Or how does one really achieve that? Because you can ask someone for their blessings, or sometimes someone might ask, but it seems like, in my sense of the term, a little bit artificial, just when I hear it, someone asking or something. So
usually,
how does success?
Excuse me for being so blunt. it's social more than it is spiritual. That's my experience. You know, it's like paying obeisances, or addressing one another as Prabhu. It's a social thing that it's an etiquette thing that we're taught. But entering into the, exactly as Prabhupada speaks in that little passage from Introduction to Bhagavad Gita, entering into the spirit of this understanding is very rare. So the real thing is different than the social thing. The social thing is closer than, you know, in your face kind of speech and behavior and attitude than, you know, seeking the blessings and the mercy of others. But the spirit of it is fully recognizing Krishna delivers his mercy through his representative personalities, and therefore I'm seeking his blessings by approaching. And then, you know, then it's a conscious act. It's not a casual social, you know, sound that really is hollow. The real thing is rare. But the real thing is the real thing. It is what it is. You're seeking Krishna's mercy through the mercy of those who represent Krishna.
Is that mainly done by serving them?
Well, again, it's, you know, from the heart. In service, all we do is serve. That's who we are. We're servants. Das, das, anu, das. But so then you do that from your heart. That's the real expression. Now, what does that mean? You know, like our discussion the other morning. Well, there's submission. Not just external. We do because this is our relationship with Krishna. This is a feature, an aspect of our relationship with Krishna, who we want to cultivate more deeply a relationship with. This is part of my relationship with Krishna, with that bhakti. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You had mentioned quite strong, you quoted some very strong statements about fault finding. And I wanted to ask you that when you spoke about devotees, especially who dedicated their lives in propagating the holy name of the Lord, and devotees have dedicated their lives in propagating the holy name of the Lord. So I'm going through a certain relationship where I'm hearing fault finding about GBCs who are dedicated many, many years of their lives in this role. And so I wanted to ask you that when practicing Vaishnavas who are in leadership positions say things about other senior Vaishnavas that to me sounds like fault finding, how, as a neophyte devotee, how I should process it, and what should that relationship look like? What should that relationship with me and the other devotee look like?
What should it look like?
How should the dynamics change?
One is how you process, and the other is how you interact with that person going forward in time, yes?
Yes.
It depends on your consciousness, how you process it. For example, having heard some of the things that I just recited from Chaitanya Bhagavat, you can, for example, remind this particular devotee. Let me quote for a moment from Vrindavan Das Thakur, who speaks about this that just took place. And it is detrimental, both for one to speak such a thing and for one to hear such a thing. Detrimental to our spiritual well-being. That's, you know, one thing you can do. You can share your feelings, but you can take shelter of Scripture and say, according to Scripture, this is detrimental. Or you can say, my dear Prabhu, I'm very neophyte. I can't hear these things. You want to speak these things? Speak to someone who can help you. But, you know, I can't. So please don't speak these things. And if you really want to continue speaking this thing, then I'm going to have to get up and leave. Because I can't hear these things. It'll harm my spiritual life. Whatever you want to do with your spiritual life, you can do that. Maybe you should go to someone who can do something about what your concerns are. I'm not going to be able to do anything what your concerns are, whatever your concerns are, right or wrong. Otherwise, you know, take it to the right place, not over here. Thank you. And if they, you know, carry on, then, you know, respectfully leave the place. And then, you know, maybe at a later point in time, you go back to the person and say, you know, this is like the relationship. It's just how you process. It's not like have a bad feeling towards the person is how you should process it. Just you, in a humble mood, wish to be of service to that Prabhu, and therefore either appeal to them or appeal to someone who is their superior or their authority and say, not in a matter of complaining and self-fault-finding and so forth, but in a matter of concern spiritually for the well-being of myself and others and this particular Prabhu. They may need this issue addressed. I'm not in a position to do that. You know, protection, please. And pray for the spiritual well-being of that person, that whatever it is that's troubling them gets relieved.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You have something, Sibal?
You read my mind, Guru Maharaj.
Yeah. Body language.
I've been thinking and trying to put it together, but
this will be our last question. Yes? Lunch at what time? Oh, what happens at 12:30? Arti. Huh? Okay, no question. You can talk to me later. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Shri Kishore Kishori ki. Jai.